Stutter Talk would like to thank the good folks at the International Fluency Association for helping to make this episode possible. Visit them at theifa.org. Visit Stutter Talk at stuttertalk.com. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stutter Talk. This is Christopher Constantino. I am in Lisbon, Portugal, at the International Fluency Association's World Congress. And I am sitting here talking with Talis de Nardo. He's a PhD student from the University of University of Louisiana in Lafayette. I was just in Talis's talk, and his talk was titled Successful Stuttering Management in Adolescents Who Stutter, a Qualitative Analysis. And I'm going to let him talk about a little bit about why he did the study that he did, and then we'll get into his results. Hi, Talis. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Hey, Chris. Thank you. Thank you for having me here. Yeah, so for this study, now we feel like there's kind of a gap there where adolescents get left out. Now, there's a lot of research that focuses on preschoolers who stutter, and a lot of research that focuses on adults who stutter. Now, and a lot of times the adolescents, they get grouped together with the adults who stutter. But, you know, they have very different life situations. You know, I mean, if you recall high school, it's very different than your professional life.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's some research with adolescents who stutter that does show that that's the peak of their negative attitudes towards communication, anxiety, and also communication apprehension.
Yeah, why I think this is such an important research topic is I know me personally and a lot of people anecdotally who I've spoken to, adolescence is a time where you sort of drop out of speech therapy, right? Like often as a kid, you're forced to go to speech therapy for better or for worse. Then when you become an adolescent, you're kind of given the choice, and that's when people step away and things sort of spiral down. And usually, as an adult, you come back for help when you reach some sort of... people have often talked about reaching a rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can sort of figure out how to better serve adolescents, perhaps adults don't have to reach rock bottom, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I think this is a very urgent topic.
Right, you know, and the demand for effective communication gets more and more important as you age. You know, so going to college and doing job interviews, you know, so if you can get your ducks in a row before that, I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us about what you did in this study.
All right, so we're fortunate that we have a really strong NSA group in Lafayette. And it's a group especially designed for teenagers who stutter. So we have a lot of access to adolescents who stutter. So we identified 7 adolescents who were successfully managing their stuttering. Now that's different from recovery, because you know they still stutter, but they're, you know, there's much more to stuttering than you're over a stuttering.
Absolutely.
So we identify 7 of them, and they had to be identified as successful by themselves, by a speech pathologist, and also by their parents and someone who is successfully managing their stuttering. And we did a very long, in-depth interview with them in which we got their entire life experience with stuttering. And then we divided in 3 stages, pass, when they were unsuccessfully managing their stuttering, the current, which is now to their successfully managing their stuttering, and the transitional stage, which is where we focused. It's where they went from unsuccessfully to successfully managing their stuttering. So from the common themes, we found that successful therapy, support group, family involvement, and acceptance of dysfluencies were the themes that kept coming up and up in that transitional stage. They really propelled them to be managing their stuttering successfully.
That's great. So just to sort of reiterate that, your main concern was that important transition stage, right? And you named four core themes that seemed to pop up again and again that were successful therapy, support group experiences, family involvement, and acceptance of dysfluencies. Were you surprised at those? Were those, were you expecting to find anything else?
You know, there were some themes that stood out. Like under successful therapy, they all talked about how it was very important to have individualized therapy. They talked about going to public school therapy, and that didn't work because it was, you know, the same technique for everyone. And it was really cool that they all had their own favorite go-to technique to help them get through it.
I think that speaks to avoiding a one-size-fits-all therapy approach, right? That, you know, everybody's going to have something that works best for them individually, and it's important to come at therapy with a lot of different ideas and be open to, you know, new ways of doing things.
Exactly. You know, I mean, like, no one stutters the same. You know, like, the way that I stutter is different from the way that you stutter. So why would one technique fit on everyone?
Yeah, you say that like that's obvious, but I'm not sure everybody understands that.
Yeah.
And that's it's important. I'm happy you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, something else I thought was really interesting was that they had this selective control. No, so they would analyze each situation, you know, that school with their family, and they would, you know, in their own mind, gauge how much effort do I want to put to sounding fluently. You know, like, so they talked about with their family, I can just stutter and that's okay, but that school, I really want to put some effort there. And it was interesting because they all had different perceptions of it. For example, the one kid, he always used his techniques when talking to his friend. This other one, she would only use her techniques if it was absolutely necessary, like in a job interview. But she was fine with what she was. And I thought that was really interesting.
Cool. So, what do you think takeaway messages are for therapists coming out of this research?
Well, I think that it's, you know, important to really get to know your patient, you know, and find what's going to work for them. Another major theme was family involvement. And, you know, at this stage of life, family is really important, and they can be such a helpful force with motivation and reminding people to use the techniques. And also support group was very important. So I would say that, you know, a comprehensive approach, you know, stuttering isn't just isolated to the person who stutters. It's their entire community, family. I think that that's important to attack it in all sides.
Yeah.
To reach whatever goal you have.
It strikes me as you were saying that, I was thinking that, especially as, you know, a Western society, we often place a heavy value on independence, right? You know, it's almost like our ideal person is 100% independent from everybody else. Mm-hmm. But what you're telling me is that a lot of the things that seemed helpful was dependent on other people, right? Family involvement, self-help group involvement. It's almost as if perhaps more value should be placed on interdependence rather than independence, right? That it's important to realize that it's okay to rely on other people, and you don't have to do it all by yourself, right? You're not alone. Your family loves you. There's other people who stutter. Emphasis on interdependence is really called for.
That's a really, really good point. You know, I mean, then you're right, especially for communication. Unless you're going to be talking to yourself, you're going to be interacting with people. So, you know, why not get their help while you're talking to them?
Yeah, that's actually, I never thought about it like that. It's strange to put emphasis on independence for an activity that requires other people, right? Communication is always relational. It's always talking to somebody else.
But, you know, stuttering is so personal.
Yeah.
You know, it's so personal. And, like, I mean, I know that I was the only kid in my school who stuttered.
Or the only kid you knew of, right?
Yeah.
I often bring this up, and I bring it up again and again, that if 1% of the population stutters, chances are that we're missing. You would expect to hear people stuttering all the time. Mm-hmm. Chances are we're missing a lot of people. Whether their passing is fluent or whether, you know, people just aren't hearing their disfluency, the stuttering. But I think a lot of people have that experience that they feel like I'm the only person in my school. And that may be the case. It also may be the case that the other people in your school who stuttered passed.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, it's still that perception that you are the only one. And
yes. And that's what's important, is that perception.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a lot of other talks to get to, and I want to thank Telus for his time. Also, I want to thank you for doing qualitative research. As a person who also does qualitative research, I know that it can be hard to sort of start doing it in a field that hasn't seen a lot of it. So you're kind of putting your neck out by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it takes a lot of time to go through all that data. Yes, and I know what that's like. So thank you for the work that you are doing.
I really enjoy doing that. Thank you for having me.
Yep, no problem.